Joining us now to analyze today's headlines is Courtney Morris. She's an assistant professor of African American and Women's Studies at Penn State University. Hi, Courtney.
Hi, Sonali.
Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton plans to give a major speech today defending the Obama administration's nuclear deal with Iran that a majority of Republicans oppose. But she will also reiterate her support for Israel, whose Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has forcefully denounced the deal. Clinton's speech says it's not enough to just say yes to this deal. Of course it isn't. We have to say yes. And yes, we will enforce it with vigor and vigilance. Yes, and we will embed it in a broader strategy to confront Iran's bad behavior in the region. The speech comes a day after she formally apologized for using a private email server when she was Secretary of State, saying, "I take responsibility," and, quote, "Yes, I should have used two email addresses, one for personal matters and one for my work at the State Department." Meanwhile, her campaign aides are crafting a detailed plan on how to make her appear more spontaneous, a paradox that wasn't lost on many. Courtney, does Clinton's speech on Iran and Israel give you an indication of what sort of president she would be, especially on foreign policy?
Well, I definitely think that Hillary Clinton is trying to market herself and her campaign as a kind of new forward-thinking, forward-moving plan for the United States, when in reality, I think it's really just more of the same and a clear continuation of many of the kinds of foreign policy positions she took first as a senator and then later as Secretary of State. In the speech on the Iran nuclear deal, when she was talking about the relationship with Israel, we can see this most clearly, right? She's very committed to maintaining the same kind of hawkish policy position there. Continuing to fund Israel through military aid, providing them with more access to more sophisticated forms of military technology and weaponry. And this at a moment when the global community is basically censuring the state of Israel for the atrocities that it committed in Gaza last summer, which claimed the lives of some 2,400 civilians, many of them children. So in a way, I think that she's presenting herself as trying to be new and offering something fresh and exciting. And it's really more of the same. And I think that she's in many ways really out of touch with where most of the country is moving in terms of foreign policy objectives and goals.
And then the House Judiciary Committee is holding the first in a series of congressional hearings today on Planned Parenthood in the wake of edited undercover videos by a conservative group claiming that they're selling fetal body parts. The hearing, headed by Representative Bob Goodlatte, is entitled Examining the Horrific Abortion Practices at the Nation's Largest Abortion Provider. Representatives of Planned Parenthood were not invited to testify. Instead, the witnesses will include two anti-abortion activists and one pro-reproductive justice advocate from Yale University. GOP Congress members have promised a government shutdown over federal funding to Planned Parenthood in the coming weeks. The funds that the group does receive do not pay for abortion services at all. Well, Courtney, do these hearings seem more like witch hunts to you?
I think the title of the hearing alone gives it away. The Republicans aren't even trying to pretend that they're being objective in terms of what the goals of this hearing are really about. And I think that we really have to read this as part of a much larger strategy by the radical right in this country. They know that they cannot criminalize abortion. They know that they're not going to have success directly confronting Roe v. Wade and trying to have it overturned. So they've taken a strategy of essentially whittling away women's access to reproductive services that are offered by groups like Planned Parenthood. And again, as you mentioned, we know that groups like Planned Parenthood that receive federal funding are not allowed to use that funding for abortion. This is also the case for the Affordable Care Act. So it's really kind of a smokescreen for a much larger strategy of making women's ability to access spaces that provide a range of reproductive services, from birth control to annual exams, to as well as abortions, making it impossible for women to access these kinds of services. And really, the people who are the most hurt by it are low-income women of all races across the country who are unable to get the services that they need because of this very political attempt to make abortion inaccessible.
And finally, the fast food giant McDonald's made a major announcement today saying it would switch to cage-free eggs in its U.S. and Canadian restaurants over the next 10 years. According to The Guardian, the move marks, quote, the latest push under CEO Steve Easterbrook to try and reinvent the Big Mac maker as a modern progressive burger company. Of the 2 billion eggs the company buys each year, so far less than 1% had been cage-free eggs. Many are calling the move a watershed moment, given that McDonald's has the potential to sway market trends in a big way. Not everyone is convinced, however. Although cage-free hens are less constricted than conventionally raised hens, they are still often subjected to cruel practices and may be confined or kept indoors. Well, Courtney, how big is this, not just for animal rights, but food quality?
Well, you know, Mickey D's is huge. So, you know, anytime a corporation as large as McDonald's makes a change in its supply practices, the implications of that are going to be enormous. But, you know, again, I think we have to remember that this is not an altruistic shift that the company is making. It's a response to consumer demand. And I think it really speaks to the kind of increased public concern over food quality. And, you know, consumers want to know where their food is coming from, how it's produced, and what the long-term health implications of that, of those production processes are for them. So, you know, this is, it is, I think, an important intervention. But again, as you said, cage-free doesn't equal cruelty-free. And I think that if we want to try to promote the widespread adoption of more ethical food production practices in the United States, you know, we might begin by shifting away from mega corporations like McDonald's and focusing more on local food producers who I think more often are committed to producing food that's not just good for people, but is also good for the planet.
Courtney, thanks as always for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
Bye, Sonali.
Courtney Morris is our Daily News Flash guest expert. She's an assistant professor of African American and Women's Studies at Penn State University. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.